This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guests this morning are David Batker, founder and executive director of Earth Economics, and Kate Davies, director and faculty member of the Center for Creative Change at Antioch University, Seattle. David and Kate are here today to tell us how we can apply ecological economics to the Puget Sound region and how we can use this information to support a healthy and sustainable future. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would each of you like to say a few words about your respective organizations? Kate?
Well, the Center for Creative Change at Antioch University, Seattle, we offer graduate programs in environment and community management, whole systems design, organizational psychology, and our new degree is in strategic communication. What unites all of those degrees is really a commitment to positive social change, to building a sustainable and healthy world for everyone.
David?
Earth Economics is dedicated to the transition to a sustainable economy. And so we've worked on fisheries, forests, toxics, a number of issues, water and flooding. And I think we are in the sort of transition that took place in the 1930s when we received macroeconomics, and now we have to make a sustainable economy.
Would you remind us of the definition of ecological economics?
Well, ecological economics is really saying that the economy is set within ecosystems, within a landscape, and in fact that our globe as a whole is limited. So we have microeconomics, macroeconomics, we don't have an earth-scale economics. And what we've really taken for granted in ecosystems, in fact, we can't really take for granted anymore. And now for ecological economics, so we study that important link between the environment and our economy. As well, what Kate Davies works on, you know, health is totally crucial. We recognize four capitals. Human capital, that is our bodies, our health, our knowledge, etc. Social capital, which looks at laws and our communities, how we fit together. Built capital, the structure of our buildings and other things. And finally, natural capital, the free gifts of nature.
I think that just to add to what Dave said, I think one of the key things about ecological economics that I like so much is that it begins to try to put a value on the services that ecosystems provide us with, like clean water, clean air, a healthy and safe environment. And these sorts of things really haven't been included within economics before now or included in policy decisions. And what the environmental economists are doing is really trying to change the way we think about economics and change the way we think about the services that are provided by the environment that we take for granted.
What are the benefits of analyzing the Puget Sound region from the point of view of ecological economics?
Well, I think it really can help us make decisions in a much better way in the Puget Sound region, in a way that really will enable us to build a sustainable economy in this region. And a sustainable economy is also going to be a health-promoting economy. And we really don't have that right now because these things really aren't considered in decisions that are made in this region or indeed in other regions across the country. It's really important to begin to do that so that we can build a long-term economy for the future that's going to be sustainable and that really promotes the health of everyone.
If we don't take into account the value of ecosystems and what we receive from them, we lose that value. And so, for example, Seattle and Tacoma, we receive our water filtered for free by the forests up above, the Cedar River and such. That means, for instance, Seattle does not have to have a $250 million filtration plant. Many other cities in the U.S., most do. Tacoma saves $150 million on a filtration plant. In addition, if all we do is say, well, the only thing that provides flood protection are levees, then in fact we risk complete failure of those levees because most flood protection is provided upstream by forests, wetlands, and the floodplains. And so if you look, we've identified 23 ecosystem services which are provided by ecosystems in Puget Sound for free and in perpetuity if they're healthy. And so this difference between built capital and natural capital is very important to understand. Built capital kind of falls apart. It all depreciates. Natural capital doesn't depreciate, doesn't fall apart. And so my great-great-grandchild will not drive the car I'm driving now, but they may drink the clean water that the same forest in the Cedar River watershed filters for us.
Looking at economic analysis, how would an analysis of Puget Sound or the Puget Sound region be different if the analysis were done by classical economics compared to the ecological economics that you've been speaking about?
Well, I think that's what we've had for about the last 80 or so years. And so now Earth Economics, we're conducting a study. We're just approaching completion of the valuation of ecosystems within the entire Puget Sound Basin. This is a huge stock of capital that we've never valued or actually appreciated, but it is absolutely essential to our economy. An analogous idea is Seattle Public Utilities. We conducted a study for them, and I think it was a great study, where their 30-year asset management plan for the Tolt River, for the first time, they included the forest, which actually produces the water and filters the water. Prior to that, asset management plans were just looking at buildings, pipes, you know, delivery of water. And so now we realize that, in fact, this is a huge capital asset. In the Green River Valley, we estimated ecosystem services at half to twice the value of the built capital. And it's a huge amount of value.
The other piece of this is that just as we need to value the services that are provided by ecosystems, we also need to look at the value of having an unhealthy ecosystem. What does it cost us in terms of our health, in terms of our well-being, when we live with poor environmental quality? Can we put a dollar amount on the diseases and disabilities in this region that we know are caused by poor environmental quality? For example, we know that probably about 44% of all the asthma in this region is caused by poor air quality. Well, that asthma has huge costs for us. Obviously, not only does it have direct healthcare costs, the costs of going to the doctor, visiting the nurse, getting the prescription, whatever it happens to be, but it also has a lot of indirect costs. It has a lot of costs like kids that aren't going to school. We know that asthma, for example, is one of the largest causes of school absenteeism. It has costs when parents can't go to work because they're home looking after sick children. All of those indirect health costs, as well as the direct health costs, are just huge, and they also need to be factored in to what we're doing to try and build a sustainable economy.
And one of the problems of traditional economic measures, for instance, sort of the gross domestic product, is that it counts costs like health costs positively in the measure in the GDP. So if we spend more on asthma, as we have a more polluted environment here, the GDP goes up. If we pollute our groundwater and have to spend more on bottled water, our GDP goes up. And so traditional economic measures are not subtracting out these health and environmental costs of a certain style of development. Whereas if we measure those health costs, if we measure those costs to the environment, then we get a better idea of how we actually improve our quality of life and our economy here in this area.
Yeah, it's like our current economic system has it backwards. It really does.
Getting back to your study, David, where you said you had looked at 23 different ecosystem services, could you say a few more words about which services you've evaluated?
Yes. In Puget Sound, we're looking at about 11 or so, and we've identified 23 categories of ecosystem services. So just one category would be recreation, fishing, hiking, boating, birding, etc. And then if you look at another, clean water, provisioning for drinking water, flood protection, very crucial ecosystem service, because we've realized that all of our watersheds are now receiving more water than they did 40 or 50 years ago when the whole levee structure was put in place. So, for example, the Cedar River receives almost 50% more water during peak flood periods than it did 50 years ago. So all of the levees are at the wrong scale. And so we can either try to build higher levees where you have more water coming down and demolishing those levees and greater risk of really serious catastrophic flood, as we've seen in Pierce County in 2005, King County 2006, Lewis County in 2007. Or we can start saying, now we're going to work with the environment. We're going to widen those floodways. That will give us greater salmon provision, et cetera. When you have a healthy watershed, you actually get the full basket of ecosystem services.
In looking at the economic worth of the ecosystem services, how extensive is it?
It's enormous. When we did the study for the Green River Valley, which included the city of Seattle, 14 other cities, we estimated $40 to about $140 billion in value. And the WIRA 9, that's that watershed steering committee, which was composed of 70 people, initially, their reaction was shock. And the Chamber of Commerce member said, well, that's outrageous. Those numbers are huge. And then when we went through the list and how it was derived and, you know, if you shaved off all the trees, what would we have for flooding, et cetera? The same representative said, I agree with you, and I think it's an underestimate. We must communicate this to the public. And the study was unanimously approved by a group that you might consider pretty contentious, you know, from the Master Builders Association to environmental groups. And so I think it's sort of the realization of the value of something, value we've taken for granted in the past.
I know, Kate, you've actually looked at numbers for health.
Sure. Well, the study that I did was to try to get a handle on what some of these health costs are. What are the health costs associated with diseases and disabilities that are linked to the environment? So I mentioned asthma a few minutes ago. We also know that there's a whole range of other diseases and disabilities that where there's a proportion of that disease that can be directly linked to environmental causes. Things like various sorts of cancer, for example, things like cardiovascular disease, birth defects, some neurobehavioral disorders. We know that there's some environmental role in all of these diseases. So by estimating what that role is, and that work's been already done by the World Health Organization, and looking at what the costs of these diseases are using nationally accepted models, what I was able to do was to estimate what are the costs of diseases and disabilities from the environment in the Puget Sound region. And what I found was that, in fact, the environmental diseases and disabilities in the Puget Sound region cost us about $1.5 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars a year, which is huge. It's just huge. At a state level, it's between $2.5 and $3 billion a year. And these are costs that we don't normally think about because they are costs that are borne by the whole of society. They're not borne by any particular person, any particular company. They're borne by all of us as a society, and so we just don't think about them. And a lot of these costs are preventable. You know, if we had clean air, if we had even cleaner water than we have, then a lot of these costs could be prevented. So a lot of it's unnecessary. And it's a drain on the economy.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with David Batker, founder and executive director of Earth Economics, and Kate Davies, director and faculty member at the Center for Creative Change, Antioch University, Seattle. Our topic is applying ecological economics to the Puget Sound region. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Based on the ecological economic evaluations that have been done, which ecosystem services provided in the Puget Sound Basin are most important?
Well, certainly provision of water, flood protection, recreational value, there's a huge number. And these are what we call sort of end-of-the-line ecosystem services, but there is supporting ecosystem services also, which are very difficult to value, nutrient regulation and such. And I'd just like to follow up on one point that Kate made, though, about if we look at our economy, what is our goal for our economy in the Northwest? How do we make ourselves better off, a higher quality of life? Is it more stuff, whether it has lead and cadmium and mercury in it, and you know whether we expose ourselves to these things? Or is it actually understanding that our health, our communities, our environment are just as vital a parts of the economy and our quality of life as our sort of built capital? And I think that the transition we need now to a sustainable economy is saying, if you don't take the toxics out of products, if we don't clean up the air and water, yes, we're going to get cancer. We're going to have asthma. We're going to have a lower quality of life. We're going to have greater flooding. We're going to have these other damages. So the true root is to eliminate these, and this is fits with even traditional economics. These are externalities. When someone has an economic activity and they damage your health, a third party, that's an externality. It cannot be an efficient economy as long as you're allowing these externalities, these costs borne by others, whether they're healthcare costs or environmental costs or social costs. So it's about time that we took this very seriously. The only way, in fact, I think we can improve our economy is to take health, environment, and what happens to our communities extremely seriously.
You know, there's been, if you look at the growth of the economy, it has been true that up until a certain point, economic growth is linked, is associated with improvements in health. If you look at gross domestic product of various countries around the world, even though I fully accept, as Dave points out, that gross domestic product is a pretty awful economic indicator, but using that because it's basically all we've got to use, if you look at that around the world, there is a correlation up to a certain point between gross domestic product and health. In other words, up to a certain point, the economy does make us healthy. But beyond that point, once people's basic needs have been met, then getting richer and richer as a country or as an individual doesn't make us healthier, and it certainly doesn't make us happier. In fact, there's a lot of evidence showing that increasing wealth, increased wealth for very rich people are in fact less happy, less content than people that maybe don't have a super high level of income. So we really have to ask this question, what is the economy for? Is it about continuous growth? Is it about continuous expansion that is not good for our health and that is not making us happy and for sure is destroying the ecosystem? Or is it about something else? Is the economy really about a better quality of life, a sustainable life, a healthier life? And I think those are the things that I believe that we should be working for.
Based on both of your studies, which areas in the Puget Sound region should be given highest priority for restoration and or protection?
Well, of course, I'm a human health person, and so I believe that one of the key things we should be looking at is how can we build an economy in the Puget Sound that is really health promoting. And a really health promoting economy, of course, would also be ecologically sustainable. And this is not rocket science. We know what makes people healthy. It's really simple. What makes people healthy are good links with their communities, strong social networks, good jobs where people are respected. What makes people healthy is education, literacy, access, that everyone has access to health services. If we could build an economy around some of those factors, then I think that it would be a much more health promoting and sustainable.
And I think in the past, we've sort of viewed the environment and in fact, perhaps our health is sort of nice amenities, but then there's the real economic development, which is, you know, put up houses, et cetera, and, you know, industrial construction or whatever. But in fact, these things go hand in hand. These are complements. We cannot do without each one. And we had an interesting case in the Green River Valley. There's a North Winds Weir, which is a project for salmon restoration. And Doug Osterman is the head of the Wairanae there. And there was some debate. Should $5 million be spent on this project for salmon restoration? And some in the business community and our own port said, well, that's like $2,000 per salmon. That's just ridiculous, a ridiculous investment. But then we showed, in fact, that if you put all these off-channel sloughs in and expand that waterway, then you get a lot of flood protection downstream in the Duwamish, where Boeing is and the port and all these other industries. And then they sat back and went, you mean we get flood protection out of salmon restoration by having a healthier watershed? Well, in fact, in that case, we love salmon restoration. We'd like more of it. And so I think, again, we need this vision throughout the Puget Sound region. I wouldn't say that there's just one area we need to highlight. In fact, in every single watershed, we're making a decision about what kind and how much built capital to have, what kind of quality of health we're going to have, and how much natural capital we're going to have, and the impact on communities. And unless we take these four capitals, you know, into account, social, human, built, and natural capital, their complements, we're going to cause a lot of failures. We're going to overbuild some watersheds, and then we're going to have a tremendous amount of flooding. That's what happened in Lewis County, in fact.
What would be some additional examples where people have accepted ecological economics and made decisions based on it in the Puget Sound region?
I think there are some very exciting examples. For example, not just in Puget Sound, but from Alaska to California, we worked very closely with a spot prawn fishery. And here in Puget Sound, we have a spot prawn fishery. And from Alaska to California, trawling was phased out, which was a very destructive form of fishing because you have a lot of bycatch. You catch other fish, rockfish, etc., and they're killed in the process. Then the fishery switched to a trap-caught fishery. So you haul up spot prawns that are live. You get $10 a pound for those rather than $3 for crunched around, you know, trawled up spot prawn. So it's more sustainable. It's more lucrative. It's a shift to sustainability. We've got the same with the paper industry starting to move to reduce their negative footprint, and I'm very excited about that. I think it'll be more sustainable industry and a whole variety of other examples I could give, but maybe, Kate, you can give a couple.
It's a little more difficult to come up with really concrete examples of how the health costs from environmental diseases have actually been included, because this is still a very, very new field. The whole idea of looking at the economic costs of environmental diseases and disabilities has really only been around for a few years, and so there are relatively few studies on this topic. But it is an area where there's an awful lot of interest. And since I released my study, I had a lot of interest from state legislators who were really keen, because this is exactly the sort of information that they are looking for to make policy decisions. These types of studies are now being done right across the country in different forms. For example, looking at the health costs from particular industries like coal-fired power plants, for example. There have been studies looking at the health costs from the environmental quality that's coming from coal-fired power plants. It's the same basic idea, but it's a different way of approaching it. There have been a fair amount of studies looking at the health benefits that in economic terms that we get from the Clean Air Act in this country that's been around for many, many years. And yet we haven't really thought, what are the health benefits of those regulations? And so that work has now been done. So there's really a growing number of these studies that are being done and that are being considered by policymakers and by economists, too, who are making some of these decisions, and they're beginning to think about what the health costs are.
Just think, had we not phased out leaded gasoline, we would have had all these years and millions of gallons of gasoline burned and a layer of lead laid down here in Puget Sound to damage this and future generations. Kate's point on coal is great. Coal has never been examined. We never, I think, approach a lot of industries correctly. Coal has never been looked at the full number of externalities and costs associated with coal, from mining and water pollution to mercury deposition. It's the number one source of mercury on the planet, asthma and air pollution, SO2, etc. So if you take all those costs and actually included them in the price of coal, it would be far, far more expensive. And we'd find that, in fact, renewable resources look pretty cheap, in fact, in that case. And if you look at mercury, the state of Washington, we're looking at all of our lakes being polluted by mercury, all of our large marine fish being polluted by mercury. There are two sources of that: coal in the United States and coal in Asia from mercury drifting over. It's really a choice we have. We flip on the light today and we get a little bit of energy from coal, and we're likely contaminating all North American lakes for a very, very long period of time.
You know, the lead example is particularly interesting that Dave raises. We have watched lead levels in children come down since we banned leaded gasoline. So we know that that very simple preventive measure has reduced pollution in children. We also know that when children are exposed to lead, that they lose IQ points. There are IQ, what are called decrements, associated with lead exposure. And the relationship between lead exposure and the amount of IQ points that children used is very, very well known. Well, what's also known is that people with lower IQ find it harder to get good paying jobs. So here's a case where an environmental exposure is directly related to someone's ability to get a good paying job and to contribute to the economy. So lead pollution has actually cost our economy billions and billions of dollars that basically have not been factored in. Thankfully, that's now beginning to be corrected. But lead water pipes are still a very, very significant problem in this country.
There are a number of major efforts going on now in the Puget Sound region to, for example, clean up Puget Sound and also try to address climate change. To what extent do you find your way of thinking or your suggestions are being included in the considerations that these groups are undergoing?
I'm very excited about it. I think that one of the biggest problems is if you have a problem and you don't have an institution at the scale of the problem, it's hard to solve it. So, for example, the Puget Sound Partnership is the right scale to start solving problems in Puget Sound, in this basin. That's really a crucial step, and I think we need aggressive action to really make a difference. And climate change also is going to change the nature of our economy. It already has. We've had 3 years of record rainfall, as I mentioned, Pierce County, King County, and Lewis County, all record floods in the last 3 years. 80% of our water is held in snowpack. And if we lose that, then we're looking at real serious drought problems in the summer and a huge number of other issues. So if we don't take these climate change and the quality of our health of Puget Sound into account, then in fact we are going to have a less efficient economy that is producing fewer benefits for people in the future. We will be less competitive. If we take the health and social environmental impacts into account in our economic decision-making, really gear our economy with climate change in mind, with reducing toxics, then I think we can have a more efficient and beneficial economy that really does improve our quality of life.
You know, I am very excited about the regional initiatives that are underway right now in the Puget Sound region. I think this is exactly the way that we need to go. We need regional solutions for regional problems. And after all, even with global environmental problems like climate change, you solve them at the local level. You solve them by everyone putting in place local solutions. That's not to say we don't need the global agreements and so on. Of course we do. But the action is really on the ground. And one of the things that I find most exciting is that there is this growing recognition of the need for locally based, regionally based institutions that can really look at how the economy and the environment and the community come together, and how do they interact with each other, and how can we create institutional systems and social systems and economic systems that really look at the integration and building a sustainable future. The emphasis on the local that we're seeing, not only in this region, but I think across the country, is just terrific, and I think is exactly the way to go.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think that our economy must be viewed more widely now. In the past, if you wanted more fish out of Puget Sound, you needed more boats and nets. Now we're not short of boats and nets anymore. We're short of fish. And if we're going to have a healthy economy, we must recognize there's more than built stuff, more than built capital. Essential to a healthy economy is healthy natural capital, healthy social capital, and healthy human capital. And unless we integrate those three areas, we're going to find ourselves building huge costs on those ledgers while we have a little more built capital. Now, the market has done a good job. We have loads of things. We really need to focus on the areas where we have greater shortage and scarcity. In fact, that's human health, quality of life, and natural capital.
You know, the message that I'd like to leave people with is that we can change. When we have students coming through our doors at the Center for Creative Change, often they feel that they can't make a difference, that the institutional systems like the economy, like government, like big corporations are just too huge to change. It's just impossible that they can't make a difference. And my message is we can make a difference. We can redesign the economy. We can create responsive government. We can have corporations that are more sustainable. If we really try and we really work together, we can make change. And I really think that this is a hopeful message. We know that it's true. People working together is really the only thing that has really ever affected social change. And by working together and collaborating and really believing that we can build a sustainable and healthy Puget Sound region, we can do it. So that's really the message I'd like to leave people with.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have just been speaking with David Batker, founder and executive director of Earth Economics, and Kate Davies, director and faculty member at the Center for Creative Change at Antioch University, Seattle. For more information, check on the web at www.eartheconomics.org and www.antiochsea.edu/about/creative-change. Again, eartheconomics.org and antiochsea.edu/about/creative-change. David Batker and Kate Davies will speak about applying ecological economics to the Puget Sound region at 6:30 p.m. this coming Wednesday, February 13th, at Seattle's Town Hall as part of the 2008 Environmental Health Lecture Series. For more information about the event, go to the web at www.iceh.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.